This is NDPR's Jazz Beat. I'm Tom Reaney with a podcast edition of my jazz blog, which you can find at nepr.net. With summer now in season, here in Springfield, we're looking forward to another great lineup for the third annual Jazz and Roots Festival, taking place in the heart of downtown Springfield at Court Square on Saturday, August 6th. It's free and open to the public, and it'll be a day-long opportunity to see the community come together in celebration of jazz and roots music. Here on Jazz Beat, you'll have a chance to preview that lineup as we hear from some of the performers coming out to join us for the festival. Today, my guest is Terry Lynn Carrington. How are you doing today?
Yeah. I'm good. Thank you.
Terry, Benny Golson has a new memoir. It's called Whisper Not, the Autobiography of Benny Golson. And in it, he talks about the advent of a new wave of women in jazz. And he mentions you, of course, in praising just the amazing profusion of women who are playing the music these days. Benny says he's glad to see what he calls the late arrival of justice. How do you like that phrase?
Wow, I had no idea. Thank you for sharing that with me. The late arrival of justice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that's a very strong statement, and I commend him for saying that. I think that women have just kind of been socialized differently over the years. And after a while, you realize you don't have to do things the way you used to. You can compose your own life based on a new generation, a new time period, new technologies, new ways to care for children if you have them, or it being okay to decide not to start a family. So many things have changed. So I think that there are more women in male-dominated fields, not just in jazz, but in male-dominated fields in general, just because of a newer sense of freedom that we're all claiming.
Mm-hmm. Was the Mosaic Project your idea and conception from the start?
Yes. Yes. It started actually, we did a gig. I had a show in Eilat, Israel, and I called Jerry Allen and Esperanza Spalding and Tinica Postma. Mm-hmm. It was a quartet show, and I didn't realize I had called all women until after, I had called them. It wasn't a planned thing. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, this is the first time this has happened for me. And I said, well, I want to do something to celebrate this and further this feeling of celebrating women.
How long ago was that?
Oh, goodness. I guess it's been 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, because I see the Mosaic Project itself, the Concord Jazz release, was 2011, so about 5 years ago for the recording, that beautiful record.
Yeah, thank you, yes.
Who's with you this weekend in Germany?
Well, Tinica Postma was on saxophone, and Helen Sung on piano, and Josh Hari on bass, mm-hmm. who's been my regular bass player with the Mosaic Project for a while now. And I have one vocalist, China Moses, which is Dee Dee Bridgewater's daughter, mm-hmm. and she lives in Paris. And it's just a quartet plus vocals for this show.
Mm-hmm. And who will you be with in Springfield?
Well, Springfield, that show is a Money Jungle show, so totally different repertoire. And that will have Mark Shim on saxophone, Takeshi Obayashi on piano, and Zach Brown on bass.
Mm. I didn't know it was Money Jungle until you just mentioned that, but that is... That's delightful news for this Duke Ellington fanatic, and I'm really looking forward to that. I'm holding the liner notes, the tray card for the Money Jungle Provocative in Blue recording that you made several years ago of that famous session that Duke hosted with Charles Mingus and Max Roach. How did you come to decide to make the Money Jungle project?
I don't know. It's interesting. I didn't I didn't really plan it. It just happened. It's one of those things. When I first heard the CD, it was only about maybe 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was drawn to it and started, you know, writing some arrangements and putting some songs in my set. And then one day I thought, I just want to cover this whole album. And I just thought it would be cool. And I had no idea that it was the 50th anniversary of the original release when I did it. So it just seemed serendipitous, I guess. But there's just a certain energy on that CD that drew me in. I think it, you can hear, like, the times, you know, the conflict of the times and the conflict of the musicians. It seemed like Max Roach and Charles Mingus were duking it out a bit. and I thought it was great how Duke Ellington, you know, he let them be the stars of the recording, kind of laid in the cut, and let them really shine. And I just thought it had such strong melodies. For me, it was something that I could sink my teeth into.
Yeah, that's a nice phrase, Duke laid in the cut. I love that record. That was one of my early Ellington albums. I grew up in Worcester and used to take that out of the public library all the time. The original United Artists jacket was there at the library. And I remember a friend of mine, we were still teenagers at the time, he said, "Man, this record sounds like war." And, you know, we later found out there was a lot of conflict between Mingus and Max on the date, but Ellington was kind of the healing force. And yeah, they brought off one of the legendary albums in modern music. So, well, that's nice. Money Jungle in Springfield.
Yeah, I always look forward to doing that particular repertoire because it's so different every night, and we can really go anywhere. We've really opened up the music. So it's not exactly like the CD.
I found it fascinating when you made the CD that on Backward Country Boy Blues, you brought in Nerf Felder and the singer Liz Wright. What inspired that conception?
Most of the themes are blues or blues related on Money Jungle, and I thought I wanted to take one and have a moment of feeling, kind of Delta blues vibe on it, or feeling retro on it, and I just thought that one was a good one to do that with. And then I wanted to take it and move it to today's jazz or modern jazz. So then I put the theme in 5/4 and put the rhythm in 5/4 and then reharmonized this song. And so I just wanted to kind of span the scope of blues for that moment.
Mm-hmm. Terry Lynn is from Medford, Massachusetts. Terry, I remember when you were emerging as a very young woman, the buzz about you was really serious around Greater Boston in the, beginning in the early to mid-70s. I remember seeing you with your father and around some venues in Boston back in that period of time. What was it that brought you to the drums and to an inspiration for this music so early in your life?
Well, my grandfather played drums, so they were in the house. He passed away right before I was born, well, a few months before I was born. And my dad played saxophone and drums, so it ran in the family. And I think just listening to music throughout my childhood, from the moment I was born or even before I was born, listening to music, I think just prepared me. I was able to lock in because my father played jazz all the time. And when I sat down to the drums, I was able to keep time. I understood, you know, the feeling of the music. And I think that's what made him and other people think that there was something there. Because I understood the swing pattern, the beat, and, you know, how it should sit. But otherwise, I think when children have opportunities to explore and discover things, this is what happens. And I just, you know, hope that there can, you know, be more music in the schools, and specifically jazz, because even when in my school coming up, there was just not much mention of jazz. There is now more in high schools and junior highs in some parts of the country, but I teach at Berkeley, and I have a high school program there. And, you know, I noticed that it's not everywhere in the country. There's a lot of jazz on the West Coast, you know, in the high school program. Some in the Midwest, not so much in the South.
We're aware of it in this area. West Hartford, Connecticut especially, both high schools, but Hall High School in West Hartford is renowned for its jazz programming. They've often competed in the essentially Ellington series through Jazz at Lincoln Center, and Hall High has Brad Meldow, Joel Fromm, and other great players are graduates of the school.
Oh, wow.
Noah Preminger. I know Foxborough, Massachusetts, has a renowned high school program which competes in the Ellington events every year. And UMass Amherst, for the last 18 years, it is now, UMass has hosted a high school invitational every spring, which is capped by sort of a big band concert this spring. It was Maria Schneider who played at the university to cap the high school event that day. So, yeah, it's happening, you know, and I agree with you. I was born maybe a decade or so before you, but, you know, I went to excellent public schools and all in Worcester, but I hardly ever recall hearing the word jazz mentioned. It certainly wasn't part of the music curriculum in those schools at the time. I laugh sometimes when I hear people sort of recalling some mythical day when jazz was more prominent in public education, but I really think it's a much more contemporary phenomenon.
I mean, I would think so. I don't know. I wasn't around, but it feels like a phenomenon to me.
Yeah. I wondered, you know, listening to your recording, I think it's on the Mosaic Project where you have the conversation or the phone call message from Papa Joe Jones.
Oh, actually, that is on a CD I did called Jazz of the Spirit.
Oh, you're right. Right. Yep. Yeah. Okay. We got straight on that. Yeah. So, you know, I was wondering, like, you grew up in a household where you heard the music. It was part of the family's tradition. What does Papa Joe Jones mean today? Or what can he mean? Or Alan Dawson, the great drummer of the Boston area and a teacher to you and so many others. What does Alan Dawson or Joe Jones or Max Roach mean to youth today? Or what can they mean?
Well, first of all, Alan's birthday was yesterday, so big happy birthday to him.
Right.
But I just think that, I mean, it's funny you mention this because I was thinking about this yesterday and this morning, this very topic, because I talk to my students about Alan a lot, because a lot of my teaching materials is what I learned from him. Mm. And then I talk to them about all the masters, you know, Max and, of course, Roy Haynes and Alan Jones and just so many, and Papa Joe Jones. And I think it's just important, one, to understand that there was a foundation, there were people that really paved the way for all this modern drumming and all the modern styles of music we're hearing now. And you have to understand the lineage, you know, the legacy that these people have contributed are like the building blocks. You know, we wouldn't be able to have Brian Blade or any of the drummers that my students are really checking out if it weren't for these other people. So I think that there's a problem with students today really checking out the history and understanding the chain of events. And I don't really know how to encourage them to do more of that other than talk to them about it but at the end of the day, they're going to do what they want to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
sure.
You can talk about it, and all you can do is hope that somebody really digs deeper, because it's just going to make them, you know, sound like they've come through a history opposed to just repertoire from the last 20 years.
Right.
And I think it's important with any art, you know, understanding the history. It just gives you a stronger foundation to grow from it. It's funny, when I was 18 and I would go hang out with Jack DeJohnette, I remember he was playing a lot of Philly Joe Jones looks. We'd just be in the house, and he would say, check this out, check this Philly Joe look out. And I was thinking, wow, why is he doing that? I want him to, you know, show me, you know, something of his. You know? And then, the older I got, you know, the more I understood how, when we go back, it has so much more poignancy.
Mm.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. Speaking of Philly Joe, today is his birthday anniversary.
Ah,
yeah.
I had no idea.
The Philly Lick.
Wow. Okay. I'll have to post about that.
Yeah. Are you still involved with the Beantown Jazz Festival in Boston?
I am. I'm an artistic director, and unfortunately this year I won't be able to be there. It'll be the first year that I miss it. I have a show in Morocco, but it still will be a great festival this year, and we have Al Jarreau coming, and he's kind of the headliner, and also a lot of, you know, local artists. It'll be fun.
Are you spending a lot of time these days living in the Boston area?
I'm in Boston. Obviously, that's where I live, so I'm here or there quite a bit. I travel a lot, too, but there's no place like home, as they say, so I'm always looking forward to coming back home.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear. Because you were out in Los Angeles for quite a while. I remember I would drive home from my show was Monday through Friday, and I'd go home late at night, and I'd see you all the time on Arsenio Hall, and... what was that experience like, being on television every night?
Oh, wow. That was a very special time period for me. A bit of a breakthrough moment where a lot of people became aware of me. And even though I wasn't playing jazz on the show, it was something that helped. That was just get me to the masses, so to say. So when I did come out with a jazz record, there were just a few more people that knew knew about me that might, you know, want to check out some jazz. So I feel like it was helpful in that way, helpful to my career. And also just playing with so many legendary artists. I played on that show with Little Richard and Whitney Houston and the Winans. And who else came on? I think Nancy Wilson came on once. Even pop bands like New Kids on the Block, and so many people. It was a great time. And then also 10 years later, I did the Vibe TV show. It was Quincy Jones' show, and it was hosted by Sinbad.
Oh, right.
Sinbad. And that was great, too. It was more of a focus on R&B music, and got to play with classic artists like James Brown and Rick James and Beyonce and different people, so. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Did you anticipate something like this, a career as sort of varied and well-rounded when you were a kid? Has a lot of this been a delightful surprise to you, or you just feel ready all the time?
Well, I think when we're successful at music or successful in the arts, it's always a bit of a surprise. A delightful surprise, because you just never know how it's going to pan out. And I think you have to be committed to excellence and committed to your journey unknowingly, you know, where it's going to go. And when things come together, you're grateful, you're happy, and it lets you know that you're doing the right thing with your life.
That's how I have felt over the years.
My guest is Terry Lynn Carrington. Come on out to see Terry Lynn and the Money Jungle Provocative in Blue presentation at the at Court Square, downtown Springfield, on Saturday, August 6th at this summer's Jazz and Roots Festival. Thanks for the time today, and I look forward to meeting you on Saturday, August 6th, and wish you very well on your tour right now in Europe.
Thank you so much. Nice chatting with you, and I look forward to meeting you as well.
Okay, thanks, Terry Lynn.
People are basically vehicles to just create money, which must create more money to keep the whole thing from falling apart, which is what's happening. There is no profit under the current paradigm. In saving lives, putting balance on this planet, having justice and peace or anything else. You have to create problems to create profit.
myself to economic conditions that will take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few. Leave millions of God's children smothering in an airtight cage of poverty.
The challenge we face in these early years of the 21st century is how to grow our economies and ensure shared prosperity.
I still spend about an hour a day trying to study this economy. And I'm not running for anything, and I don't have a political agenda. I tried to figure out what...
The amount of deprivation in our world still remains unacceptable. Half of our fellow human beings live on less than $2 a day. That's simply not acceptable in a civilized world.
It's important that we address the irresponsibility and recklessness that got us into this mess in the first place.
For additional material and recordings, visit the jazz blog at nepr.net. For Jazz Beat, I'm Tom Reaney.